Warning, this upcoming show with Ron and Russell Mail about the movie Annette contains spoilers.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. The music you just heard was composed for Bookworm by Ron and Russell Mail, who comprise the band Sparks, and they are my guests today, not just because of the recent documentary that's brought them to world attention, but to the magnificent new movie, Annette, a film directed by Leos Carax and which opened the Cannes Film Festival. And the movie is in theaters in Los Angeles as you listen to this. So yes, walk and put on your masks and get into the movie theater. This is a movie to see on screen. This is a movie whose textures and beauties are outstanding. This is, you know, a movie by artists. Now, Ron and Russell are brothers, and I'm going to be asking them questions that either of them can answer, but I may direct them. Can you tell me, Ron, where the idea for Annette first came from?
Well, originally 9 years ago, we wanted to do a long narrative musical piece. I mean, we're kind of used to doing discrete 3 and 4 minute songs. And we had earlier done a radio music for Swedish national radio, an extended piece called The Seduction of Ingmar Bergman. And we enjoyed that experience so much that we wanted to do it again. And so we came up with for the idea of Annette, and kind of the genesis was we wanted to do something with fewer characters than The Seduction of Ingmar Bergman, so that we could tour with this. So we tried to kind of work backwards and have like 3 main characters and then try to kind of mold the story around that. So we wrote and recorded the whole Annette work, and this was going to be the next Sparks album. And then we went to the Cannes Film Festival 8 years ago just to try to really see if we could get any interest in our previous project. And we were introduced to Leos Carax there. And you know, he had used one of our songs, How Are You Getting Home, from an earlier album of ours in, what was it, the time, his latest film, Holy Motors. And we just wanted to thank him, you know, basically. And so, you know, we talked with him briefly. And then we got back to LA and we said, well, why don't we just send this to Leos, you know, not really thinking of what the result might be. And he said, I really like this. And 2 weeks later, he said, I'd really like to direct this, you know, and, you know, with the obvious stipulations coming from somebody like him, that he would want to have some personal input into the project. And, you know, we were knowing what, you know, we were very familiar with his films. And so that was, you know, fine with us.
Well, years and years and years ago, Ron and Russell and I were at dinner. And when Ron told me that in this project, a baby is born who can sing opera, I just about dropped my food back to the dish. I was so shocked and surprised and amazed. But at that time, the story you told me was largely, curious, comic, but this has become a grand opera. And it's a grand opera, like grand opera, about life and love and death, life and love and murder and death. Did the project change in this way once Leos Carax joined, Russell?
No, I don't think the basic story changed at all. Maybe how we told it at the restaurant didn't do it justice. But no, the basic story was exactly what we had written and presented to Leos at the time, that we thought was going to be Spark's next album and that we could tour with this. It would be a dramatic sort of performance, a narrative performance, a story performance, as opposed to just a normal Spark's concert. Over the 8 years that we worked with Leos, both here in Los Angeles and in Paris, where Leos lives, we worked with them and kind of revised, you know, some of the characters to make them a bit richer. But the essential story is the same story that was there way back when. There were a couple of scenes that were added from our original one. There's another scene where in the movie where Marion Cotillard's character, Anne, who is the opera singer, she's kind of reflecting at that point on her life and what got her to the place she's at now. And she sings this song called...
Oh, it's a gorgeous song. Oh, it's beautiful.
Thank you. It's a song. It's called The Girl from the Middle of Nowhere. And she's reflecting on her life and where it might be headed and how she got to where she is and how she has so many hesitations about where her life is right now. And so that song was done, that piece and that whole scene was a piece that wasn't in our original version, but that we went and then wrote the music for and most of the lyrics as well. But in a lengthy way of answering your question, the story is basically the same story that was originally there.
And yet, what I saw, and I've seen it twice now, both times, I staggered out of the theater. I was so affected. This film somehow hits me, in my unconscious. And when I say that this is a new beginning for Sparks, I don't think I've seen, I mean, I know all of your work, but I don't know anything you've done that reaches these depths of profundity and terror. Now, Leos thanks Edgar Allan Poe in his thank yous, and certainly this is a story, like Poe's, in which anything can go wrong that can go wrong does go wrong. It's a bleak and inescapable tale, and it's so incredibly beautiful. You must have been astonished with pleasure and awe when you first saw a finished print.
Oh, absolutely. When actors become involved, then work that you had previously can take on, you know, kind of a deeper and kind of more, so much more intense level than what was there just on the basic written original song. So when Adam Driver and Marianne Cotillard are performing those, I think part of the tragic level of Annette was kind of elevated so much by just the passion that they brought to it. And love scenes that are done in ways that aren't the standard love scenes in Hollywood musicals, that we were astounded. We couldn't be more pleased with what Leos brought to it, but just also the level of commitment of the actors.
There's one scene that takes place on the yacht where they're having a disagreement of sorts, a discussion where Henry is a bit inebriated that night and he's on the boat and it's this stormy night. And we discussed with Leos about that scene in particular, and just the debate was on of whether it should be shot in the ocean done more realistically or whether it should be shot in a studio and done more stylistically. And we were so happy that Leos had decided on the second route to take, where it was shot in a studio in Belgium and was shot to make it look as though you're in the ocean, but done with a certain artificiality that looks just really beautiful in our minds, how there's these rear projections of the storm And it's in, being shot in a water tank in a huge studio in Brussels. But, so there's actual water there as well. But it's kind of done in a really, really beautiful, stylized kind of way. And so scenes like that were in our minds. We had, you know, can only imagine, you know, how it might look. But I think Leos did just an amazing job to kind of bring that scene just to such a kind of a beautiful level, how it was shot.
Well, it's an amazing, amazing scene. Let me tell my listeners that I'm talking to Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks. They have written the film Annette, which has been directed by Leos Carax and is in movie theaters as we speak. And I want to say that that scene on the boat in a storm becomes a waltz. They are waltzing on a boat that is rocking in the ocean in the middle of a storm. They are singing at the same time, although it opens as a musical with a bright song called So May We Start. By the time you hit that scene in the ocean, you're in the midst of grand opera and life and death. And as the comedian character, Henry McHenry, played by Adam Driver, says, that's all death and bows. Death and bows is what grand opera is. It's what his wife, Marion Cotillard, specializes in. And we are going to start seeing that on the screen. At a certain point, Leos Carax had to raise his daughter. His daughter appears in the movie. So there's something on an underground and unconscious level in this film that's autobiographical about the death of a mother and the raising of a child that somehow, although it's never brought to the surface, becomes the unconscious, the underground propeller of this film. And the power of it is so deeply bewitching. The baby, who now sings opera, but she sings through the voice of her dead mother, who is haunting us from beginning to end. And it's the most extravagant imagination that has put this world together. She, Anne, has already sung a song about how her voice provided her with a world of the imagination that she has chosen to live in ever since. And we are watching that world, and the death of that world. Is what I'm saying of any dimension to the two of you?
No, absolutely. It's operatic in the sense of, I think, the intensity of kind of the emotions that are in the piece. It isn't operatic except in the scenes with Anne, the opera singer, maybe stylistically from a musical standpoint, but it definitely is operatic as far as the scale and the passions that are there within the film.
You know, it's a thrilling movie, and we're promised from the opening song that we'll be hearing about things in a minor key, and the minor key Sparks is a new thing to me. I know places in which it's occurred, but you've written somehow in minor keys songs of passion that are dying as they're sung. You know, they sing a song called We Love Each Other Very Much, but somehow the music says, I doubt you.
Yeah. Well, I think so. I mean, it you know, obviously there couldn't be a more banal love song title than We Love Each Other So Much, but in the context of the story and the film, it takes on a different meaning than just the obligatory love song that needs to be in every Hollywood movie musical.
I'll bet my listeners, who also love Sparks as much as I do, profundity, subtlety, minor key, these are not how Sparks usually gets described. And so I'm happy to tell you that I think that this is the beginning of a whole new phase of Sparks's career. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I have the pleasure of talking with my friends Ron and Russell Mail about the movie they just wrote and composed, Annette. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ron and Russell Mail, who've become famous in an Edgar Wright documentary as the Sparks Brothers. They're a band that have, over 25 albums. I have loved them from the very beginning, and I became fortunate enough to know them. And now they have written a movie. This isn't the first movie they've written. They attempted to write music for Jacques Tati for a movie to be called Confusion. They wrote a movie for Tim Burton called May the Psychic Girl that was based on Japanese anime. And this, finally, is the one that got made. It opened the Cannes Film Festival this year because it's that big of a deal. It's an eerie and dryly comic rock opera that taps into your subconscious.
One of the keys, I think, to the intensity of the film is that Leos wanted all the singing to be live as he was shooting, that there wouldn't be any kind of dubbing. And so when they're on the scene on the boat where they're, you know, just that kind of intensity was captured. The fact that the actors are feeling, I think, a little ill at ease, not just from what was written, but the fact that they were always in danger of slipping on the wet floor, you know, all that kind of comes into it. And so I think the live character of the singing was one of the keys to getting that kind of intensity throughout the whole film.
We were in Brussels, Belgium for the shooting of that scene, and it was pretty astounding. I think they must have done, I don't know, probably 15 takes of that scene. And if it hadn't been so demanding, Leos would have probably had him do another 50 takes. But it was done on, you know, on this slippery deck of a boat being tilted back and forth as though it was on the ocean, and them being pelted with water, and then them having to sing this song and them having to act at the same time. And we were kind of just astounded by the performance in that scene.
I think that you and Leos and Adam and Marion have created a work of art. And you know that I don't take those things lightly. You really made something that haunted me for days after. I know all of Leos's films as well. I happen to think that this is his very best. This is a new aspect of Sparks, the brilliant brothers whose work I think we're only beginning to get to know. Now, we'll see if you ever release the record that you did with Russell singing and a female singer. But I have the feeling it couldn't have had this virtuosity, this passion, this intensity and unforgettability. Do you know that this is a new Sparks?
Well, thanks for your comments. You know, it's something that we're really proud of because we think it's really singular and really unique. And people have said before, having seen it, oh, is this, it's like a La La Land. And we say, well, no, not really. It's not a La La Land. And it's really not comparable to any, for better or worse, it's not really comparable to any other movie musical, but it's something that we're really proud of because it is uncompromising, and it's uncompromising in both the story and kind of the approach to the music and the way that Leos Carax chose to deliver this whole film, his vision for it as well. And so it's a really uncompromising film, and we're just so happy that it got made and that it's reaching people like yourself in the way that it has.
For me, it brought me back to the days once upon a time, every week I could go to the movies and see a new film by Godard, or a new film by Truffaut, or later a new film by Fassbinder, or by some of the Korean filmmakers who are working today, whose works astonish us. This joins them. This is not a common experience in film anymore. We are living in the Los Angeles of the Marvel film. I'm not speaking against them, but this is a level of intensity and beauty that you don't usually see. Now, all of the actors open the film by marching through the streets of Los Angeles. It's kind of astounding. The film takes place in a nighttime LA in which we witness the dissolution of a love affair, the devastation of a career, several murders. These deaths and murders occur within the context of the emotions of grand opera, so that we are not being robbed of the characters, of the actors. We are experiencing the enormous passion that film rarely brings to operatic form. I know from speaking to you, Ron and Russell, that Leos wanted to know what was happening during every bar of the music. He wanted to be able to envision it in its entirety. And you were set over and over again to piece the thing together practically bar by bar. Now, do you feel, I hope you feel very proud, because, you know, you gave me an experience that I've been longing for and waiting for.
Coming from you, that means so much to us. And, you know, that level of detail is something that Leo supplied, you know, not only to, you know, bar by bar and lyric by lyric, but watching him working with the actors. There is one scene that takes place with the Annette character where she's laying in a bed below deck in a boat, and there's a bed there with toys on it. And Leos himself would go up there and just kind of position every single piece in that bed that was going to be in the shot, you know, and you know, nothing is casual in the film. It was amazing to see him work in that kind of way. So, you know, there were times where, you know, it was 8 years of kind of that level of focus just on lyrics and all. And sometimes you get a little bit, you know, well, why, you know, can't this kind of stay the way it was? But in the end, you kind of see we saw the rationale behind it when it all is kind of put into the context of the entire piece.
Has this experience altered you, Russell and Ron, as the Sparks brothers? I feel you've entered a whole new level. And is this where you re-begin, or is this just an instance of what Sparks can do?
We feel that we have such a passion now for working within the context of a long musical lyrical piece like this, that we've already started on another project that would be another version of this that we envision for the future. But the other thing is, we don't want to abandon working within the traditional Sparks 3 and 4 minute song structure. So, you know, I'd say it's a new beginning, but we're not going to give up, you know, our kind of the formula of the past.
We're about 75% of the way through a new Sparks album, too. So we're kind of juggling everything now, just in our new reinvigorated mode by all the great stuff that's been happening around the band of late. So we're kind of seizing the opportunity and not only three quarters of the way through a new Sparks album and working on a new movie musical project, but we're also going to be touring at the beginning of next year. We have two shows at the Disney Hall that are going to be the start of the tour. And then we're playing 17 other shows around North America. And then we go to Europe as well. So we kind of have a lot on our plate, happily, coming up. That's all really exciting stuff.
I've been talking with Ron and Russell Mail, who are together the band Sparks. They are the writers and composers of Annette, directed by Leos Carax. I think it's a brilliant and great film. But more than that, coming to know and become friends with Ron and Russell Mail is one of the enormous events of my life. I am not only crazy about their work, and I have always been, but crazy about them. I used to say, if you don't like Sparks, you can't be my friends. But after Edgar Wright's documentary, so many people are interested in and love Sparks. I have many, too many friends. And I want Russell and Ron, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us on Bookworm.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Michael. And, you know, we really appreciate it.
Yes, thanks so much, Michael.
I want to tell my listeners, that due to the pandemic, we are each taping remotely, so you may hear unusual sounds in our various locations. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at all podcast services and on demand. I mean, globally, I've been getting fan mail from Africa, from South America, from Asia. This show has become a global phenomenon, and I'm very proud of it and very grateful to my listeners. I'm especially grateful to you if you become a KCRW member. I want to give a special thanks to Bookworm Show collaborators Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan and engineer PJ Shahamat. We don't usually go to the movies on Bookworm, but this is a very, very special case, and I think when you come out of the theater, you will agree. Join me again next time on Bookworm. I'm Michael Silverblatt.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mail of Sparks.
A bookworm, she's a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.